Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. Y'all, this is the arena. We don't just talk about what's happening on the surface. Let's get into the real shit, okay? Because the truth is, there's a side of the world that most people will never see, the kind of stuff that tests your character, your judgment, your faith. And when you're in the middle of it, you find out real quick who you are. And God doesn't place people in darkness without purpose. He equips them, he guides them, and sometimes I feel like he uses them to stand in the places that other people will not. So if you've ever wondered what's really going on behind the scenes, the conversation's going to open your eyes. In the hot seat today, I have Eric Robinson, 24 years in the FBI, SWAT operator, and a man who's seen both the darkest and the most human sides of the world. So, first of all, Eric, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. I kind of launch everybody into the same question. Give us your elevator pitch. Who are you? What do you do? And what makes you special?
Well, I had special in my title. I was a special agent, so that makes me special
Exactly.
right there. See,
You
that
got
makes
it.
it easy. My elevator pitch is this. I've recently written a book, having finished 24 years in the FBI, and the story is, what would happen if some mad social scientist plucked a Baptist pastor who'd never touched a gun out of the church and stuck him in the FBI for 24 years? And there were some crazy things that I got to see and be a part of, some of them very noble too. And that's my pitch, that I was just a guy who thought on a whim, let's try the FBI.
Do you really think it's a whim? I mean, there had to have been something, a planted seed. There had to have
Well,
been like a little, what?
So I would talk to colleagues, and they tell me this story of like, oh, I visited somebody, when I was 12, and then that day I wanted to be in the FBI. And they tell the story of like every step of college and
Yeah.
career to get in the FBI. And I said, oh, I thought it'd be cool.
Nice.
And so I tried it. And when I went through it, I thought, there's no way.
Yeah.
But might as well take a shot. I've asked out prettier girls before, so
Yeah.
let's take a swing here. And after I took that first phase one test, which is kind of like an SAT, and I'm a pretty smart guy, but when I finished, I went, well, I took a chance, and
Yeah,
then they
that was
called
fun.
back. Yeah. Now
Nice.
we're going from here.
Yeah, that's amazing. You've worked some of the darkest cases. What does that do to a person mentally? Because I think people just don't see the cost of that sometimes.
Well, for one thing, it's a bit normative. It's the same as I'm sitting in the hot tub for a long time and now it's not hot to me. You jump in and you think, oh,
Yeah.
this is hot. So some of that is it's not as much of a shock to the system because we've been graduating towards that. We've worked cases on pedophiles and abuse of children. And so, yeah, we're in that milieu a bit.
Yeah.
But also, it's part of it is knowing that I have a purpose, and so I'm bringing justice for people. So that's going to take an edge off. But there has to be that balancing of it, you can't have it not affect you. You can't make your heart stone because
Yeah.
now you're useless to humanity because you're too hardened. But also you can't break down crying every time you see something that's terrible. So
Right.
it was a matter of talking it out, telling stories with other agents, and in a sense saying we're survivors, we got through that, here we are, let's move on to the next.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. Just there has to be some level of separation for your sanity, you know, but I think it's impossible to be that stone cold when you're working in that space. What and the fact you admit that you talk about it, that's
Oh yeah.
incredible. 'Cause you know, I mean that's important, especially I think for men, right? 'Cause it's like a big taboo thing. Like you can't talk about your feelings, you can't talk about
Well,
the things.
and it wasn't like that, as like,
Yeah.
hey, Jerry, can we sit down and talk about this? This is
Right.
hard. It's just agents sharing stories.
Yeah.
And as I reflect, much of that is like some of them are just to be funny, but also, we're telling about a situation where, me and my buddy are unexpected to see a guy in a crawl space, and all of a sudden there he is. And now we talk about, oh, yeah, and then you had to pull him out by the hair.
Yeah.
Well, this is a guy who'd been hurting children and is screaming for us to kill him. And I mean,
Yeah.
that's kind of shocking just to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And so now we're talking about it and we're trying to get a chuckle out of it. And I
Yeah.
think that's to say, hey man, we survived. We're still here.
Yeah. Exactly. What do you think is something, especially now, because I mean, for a lot of reasons, this is not my political podcast, and I'm trying to tell myself that. I'm like, you have a different show, keep it separate. What is something that people believe about law enforcement that is just not true?
Oh, that, well, at least with the FBI, that like we have some supercomputers or special abilities. The FBI is made up of both the agents and the support staff of very intelligent, hardworking, dedicated people. And we've got a lot of resources too, but it's just normal people who have learned from others in front of them how to carry out these cases, how to do wise things, and then asking for input from others. And then, I mean, otherwise, there are two FBIs. So when people see the headlines, that's DC.
Yeah,
Those
the
are,
political side.
has like no agent wants anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And would the last thing they want to do is to be called into that. They just want to do what's in front of them.
Yeah. No, that I've heard that before, that there are two FBIs. So I love that you're sharing that here.
I'll say it again.
Being
Yeah.
in SWAT, what's going through your mind in those high stakes moments?
So with the FBI SWAT, we do a lot of training. And because of that, I feel very comfortable with the men and women. We had a female operator, first one in our Cleveland office, who's awesome. But with those around me, they're going to do what I know they need to do to cover my back, and I'm going through what I need to do for theirs. So it's, I don't mean to say this in the way where you just said men can talk about their feelings, but
Yeah.
I never felt scared.
Yeah.
I just knew I had something to do, and now let's work through what that process is. If I was scared of anything, I was afraid of failing my buddies, of
Yeah.
not showing up in the way I needed to. So it was really, what's my role? And prior to that, I'm thinking it through so I can get that done right,
Yeah.
and you know, not mess up in a way, not to be embarrassed, but like to put somebody else in danger.
Right. I hear that in the military as well, how it really just becomes like you guys work so, so close together that you just learn how to protect each other. And the scariest thing is to let down your partners, And so
Absolutely.
I've heard that a lot. How do what is it that they teach, or how do you actually train or prepare to stay calm in your head when everything is on the line? Like shit's hitting the fan. What is it that just How do you guys
Well,
practice that?
we've been in shit hitting the fan scenarios,
Yeah.
and I can't say that like we practice what, you know, here's what we should do. For me, it was always just I'm doing what I was supposed to. This is happening. That was unexpected, but I know what to do when the unexpected pops up, and now we're going to deal with that. We had one occasion where, you know, I thought we're going to have to make entry on a barricaded subject who had said, if you come in here, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
And I wasn't scared, but I remember thinking, this is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to hurt, but getting shot's going to hurt. And then on another occasion, to your question, we were in a deadly force situation. And I can show you, if you look at my heart rate, so you can tell me what minute we got into a shooting.
Yeah.
Because my heart rate spiked up to 178,
Yeah.
and then you can see that it went down. It went down very quickly because my body said, "You've got to perform now. This is life and death. I need you at your top."
Yeah.
And then, okay, we've recovered the situation. I'm going to come back down, so now you can do what you were supposed to do in the first place.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. And if you guys are just listening to this and you're not watching it on YouTube, I say go watch it on YouTube, but literally like the spike is incredible and he does go back to a normal heart rate pretty fast. So I want to talk a little bit about human intelligence 'cause you work in that. So, there's a lot of perspectives there. So tell us a little about what it is and like, what does it actually take to build trust with informants?
I think you would do well, and you would have that understanding. It's really just being available for them. Obviously, not to the point where you're being taken advantage of, but those are guys I'm going to be getting rid of anyway. But I'm making pitches to individuals, you know, set aside the criminals that, you know, we've got time over them, and so they have to do something. but these are typically ones who give intelligence, not doing drug buys. And I'm making a pitch to say, hey, I'd like you to stick your neck out for me for no reason other than you're helping the government. Yeah, I mean, you could go along your time and just keep working and have a family, but actually, I think you would be valuable. And these were men and women who they were serving the country and they could have stopped at any time. And I let them know that. But what I would show to them is that I was available for them. And there's many times, and this is pertinent, they would be texting at night. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I had one Muslim informant call me a couple of years ago on Easter. And I go, hey man, it's Easter morning.
Read the room,
He,
buddy.
yeah, exactly. And he's like, yeah, I know, I know. And I go, bro, you don't even believe in this. And he goes, hey man, how about if you just say Happy Easter? And I go, all right,
Oh.
man, Happy Easter. And then we moved on to, the stuff that he had because they're bringing valuable things. And so I had to show them that they were appreciated. It's
No, I
simple.
think that's amazing. Yeah, treat them like humans. That's what they are. And the minute you can recognize that, I think conversations go a lot different. And I think the whole world could take notes from that. Like, imagine a
Well, and
conversation.
absolutely. And I had one informant who was probably the most productive in our division, and he was a headache. I mean, he was always calling with brilliant ideas, and he'd say, hey, why don't we break into this business? And I go, man, we can't do that. And he goes, yeah. You can't,
I
but I
can.
can.
That's
And I go,
funny.
nope, you are we. We can't do that. And he would regularly have these ideas, and I'd listen, I'd be patient, and I'd tell him what we can't do. And one day on a Saturday, he calls. I'm like, okay. And he starts telling me about, yeah, there's this guy online who says he's going to attack these mosques. And this guy was in so many Telegram groups. Like, guys are always saying that. And he starts going through the details, and I'm doing my errands. And then he tells me, yeah, he's already done a scouting video and he's set to do it at noon tomorrow. And I said, hold on, let me pull over. So now it's serious. And then at that point, over a period of 24 hours, we identified who this kid was, found where he was in Ireland, and got the Garda on him. He was ready to go. He had balaclava ready. He was about to set out the door to kill as many Muslims as he could, and it came right down to the wire.
That's amazing. What is something that you have learned about human nature that most people don't understand?
Well, I don't know if I would say most people don't understand it, but I would say most of us don't practice it because it's something I fall into as well. In ministry, I had to come open and curious. Because if you come to me and you say, hey, pastor, I did this wrong thing, and I just go, yep, here's the Bible verses that tell you this is bad and what you need to do, like, I'm not open to what you're going through. And I need to win that audience with you if you're going to listen to me. And now, let's bring it over to working with informants, victims, witnesses, and even criminals, where I can't come with judgment. If the first thing, that's human nature. It's not just church. It was with criminals. If I come to you and I start judging you off the bat, I mean, you get it. I'm here with guns and handcuffs. I am judging you, but I need to be open and I need to treat you with humanity. And that kindness, very oftentimes, got me an audience with guys telling me stuff they know they shouldn't be telling me. And yet here we are. They're making confessions.
I totally can see that. And I'm going to go back to this part of judgment because I know, especially for me, I still, God's working on me. I'm a work in progress and he knows that. But like, I'm sure his frustration is like, Brandon, don't talk, just stop talking. Especially because you've dealt with everything like terrorists to crimes against children and the crimes against children. And maybe it's because I'm a mom. Maybe it's because like I'm just exhausted. I'm exhausted about what I can see, how much people get away with when it comes to children. I see that, and it's just all, it's crazy to me. And I have a lot of judgment, and I have a lot of like judge and jury. Like, if you get caught with a kid, I feel like just drag them out and be done.
I saw your post.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
one of many. I very much feel like that. How do you guys, because I know, especially you got guys out here that are missing time with their kids and they walk in and they see stuff like this. Like, first of all, how do you just not have that human instinct? Because I think it's natural, like, wow, this guy just needs to die. Like, how do you separate that honestly and then not carry it home with you?
Well, and you're far from the first person who's expressed that of saying,
Yeah.
how can you even deal with them? I just want to put a bullet in their head. And number one, for me, like, so I'm separated. Like if I step in and it's my child there, that's different. That's
Right.
different. I have a buddy. I have a Fiskars indestructible shovel. I've got property. You can work out the equation. But
Yeah.
in this case, we're going in and I know my role is to bring justice. It's not to harm them or get out my anger. That's very selfish. And I'll tell you this, that largely speaking,
Yeah.
these pedophiles, you don't have to tell them how they're awful. They know they are.
They
They hate
know.
themselves. They
Yeah.
hate themselves. And so, and that was part of getting them to make a confession is I'm coming in and they're ready for like to be told how disgusting they are. And
Yeah.
I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And part of the issue too is I don't know their life to an extent, but I can think back to this child that they harmed
Yeah.
is there's a decent enough chance that that's going to be some future agent's subject
Yeah.
because the harm that's done to them is very often what causes that acting out. And so I'm going to try to find some compassion somewhere because it's to get the job done. It's the same as that spike in adrenaline.
Yeah.
I needed it to get the job done.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to find the compassion somewhere and show it to them.
Yeah. I want to be a lot like you when I grow up. Because it, I mean, every, even just doing interviews on this show, I've opened myself up to have conversations I never thought I would. And it's grown me and it's stretched me and it's been incredible because I can see the human. I literally just had an incredible interview where, you know, everything I'm listening to, I could suddenly see like he's just this hurt, he's a hurt little boy. And like, I get why he is the way he is. Does it make it make sense? Does it make it okay? No, but I suddenly saw and I'm like, wow, like he's really going to be growing into who he can be because, you know, it's everybody's just like a hurt little kid. I get that.
And that's a curiosity that you need to come with, as opposed
Yeah.
to I know who you are and I have it figured out. I'm the FBI. I'm smart enough to know what's happening.
Yeah.
No, let me be open to what else you might have to say, because some of that is going to actually be useful to me to direct me to further the investigation.
Right.
Even if it's lies, even if it's excuses, I'm going to
Yeah.
understand things better from your point.
Yeah. Well, I think if everybody could stand to have that perspective a little bit, like that's a real life lesson. Anyone listening right now, you know, to have those conversations. And I know for a long time I was like, I refuse to talk to these people. There's no point in having a conversation. And now I'm talking to them and I'm like, wow, it's great to have a conversation because I get the perspective. Doesn't mean that it, you know, is right or wrong and it doesn't affect my core values or ethics or beliefs. But it definitely gives me that idea of I don't have to have such a hard heart. And that's what God's working on with me because my heart just got really hard. And he's like, nah, girl,
And
this is your mission.
that's an important point that you make, that you know where you
Yeah.
stand.
Yeah.
You being open to someone else's points of view doesn't have to change you. And if it does, then you can realize afterwards, oh, that was better.
Yeah.
I was too stuck on this that these guys deserve to die. And I'm not judging you for that either.
Yeah.
But like,
Yeah.
you know, then you come to meet some and it's just like the contact theory, Gordon Allport's idea of like people oppose people because they don't have that contact. And,
Yeah.
you know, I'm not saying to go out and spend tea with pedophiles, but
Correct.
being around the gang members, the drug dealers, we had one drug dealer in Chicago who was, I mean, he was moving multi kilos a month. And we arrested him. And my buddy and I were talking after the interview,
Yeah.
like, I don't know, man. I wouldn't mind living next to that guy. He was a
Right.
nice guy. You
He's a
know,
nice
he's going
guy.
to go to jail, but
Yeah.
he's a nice guy.
Yeah. No, I totally see that. In your line of work, you definitely have to see people for people, or you know, you hit the brick wall too. What is the hardest part of the job that nobody talks about?
Well, anybody who's an agent would say it's the frustration of knowing that people are breaking the law and they're not going to be charged. They're not going to get prosecuted. So I can have a case. I had a case, a long-term financial case. Main subject, got him, got some of the ancillary guys. But like, here's this guy's attorney who passed on fraudulent documents. Now we're not going to charge him. Here's his accountant who knowingly was moving money, and he didn't benefit from it, but he was harming people. Now we're not going to charge him. Here's another attorney who moved money through his IOLTA account, which is only for, client money, not for paying out debts. And so there's a constant frustration of, here we are on a wiretap listening to the main subject, drug dealer, and his wife is counting money in the background. No, she won't get charged. And so, and I, you get to a point where you don't expect it, but it's disappointing to know there are lots of people who are assisting in this criminal activity, and we just don't have the time to deal with them.
Time or resources, I'm sure,
Yeah, and it ties up the prosecutors because they can't go to trial because that's just now they can't do other things along the way.
And I mean, I think a lot of people, especially now, just don't understand the system of things. Like, we see people that get away with things, and I've really worked hard this year to kind of research like how the system has protected that, how, what the court system is like, because, it does feel like no one ever gets held accountable. They get one guy that takes the fall for everybody, and you have all these
Right.
people with blood on their hands, and you're like, holy. But yeah, no, it does make sense. You've won major awards. Are there specific cases that impacted you the most personally?
Well, as far as those awards go, one was a case that my buddy Jake had the case as the case agent, but I was right next to him, and we had others pitching in too. It was on John Burge, who was a Chicago police commander who had tortured subjects in the 70s and 80s, he and his team. And these were almost exclusively black men. And almost exclusively, they were guilty too, but these guys were just racist. They were angry. And so the city was like, hey, you're getting results. We don't care. But they would regularly beat, suffocate, threaten and carry this out. And so the FBI dropped the ball, never did anything over the years. The Chicago Police Department definitely dropped the ball, didn't do anything. And it wasn't until years later when he was sued in federal court civilly that he said he knew had no knowledge of any torture or abuse. And so we played the role of Elliot Ness and tried to get him on perjury and obstruction of justice charges. Well, after the fact, and it wasn't really justice, but we got to do something. But all along the way, my buddy Jake and I were interviewing the victims, and the victims were men who were murderers. They had murdered, or arsonists, or rapists. And so the whole point of our focus had to be, I don't care what they did, the police can't torture someone. So like, if someone in your family was assaulted and your dad or your brother wanted to go out and beat a guy, I got no problem with that. But the police can't. The police's job is to arrest and bring you to justice. And so, I talked to one of the victims, and he talked about how he was handcuffed behind his back, and the cops then stood on the bumper of the vehicle and lifted up until he thought his arms were going to rip out. And he said, then he confessed. And because of that, he missed his mother's funeral. And I didn't know. I was honestly asking him. I said, well, did they make you confess to something you didn't do? And he said, no, but I never would have confessed. And I got, well, then I don't care. Don't try to get me there. Just tell me the facts of the police did wrong. And we ended up arresting him. And he got, I believe, 4.5 years, which was far below what was necessary. And it was well after the fact, but at least we got to bring some kind of justice.
Well, speaking of justice, what does justice actually look like from your perspective after 24 years of this?
Well, I spent the first dozen years of my adulthood working in Christian ministry and getting to do things that I thought were were useful and good and noble. And when I changed careers, I felt honored that I could still do something that was noble and I could do God's work, but in bringing justice. So as I look back, it's not the number of cases. Like, as I just think about it for me personally, that was me. My life, each weekday and many weekends, was for the purpose of helping people find justice in a way that the church can't do, but maybe we could.
I want to go there because you started in ministry. How did your faith shape how you handled your work in the FBI?
Well, it was a lot. I don't think I was much different than most agents because most agents are very professional and know that you treat people with at least a modicum of humanity. But I also felt like that was what drove me to work with people. That's what I had done as a pastor. I had been trained to be a missionary to Muslim cultures, and so now here I was working with many Muslims in human intelligence. Just not trying to win them for Christ. I'm trying to win them for Uncle Sam. And so many of those things played into it where I think some of it was a combination of this is what I practiced, this is what I was trained in before, but also a lot of it is like, this is just who I am. I'd prefer to treat people politely and show them that we can have a decent conversation. And if I need to play bad cop, that's easy. I can be there in a moment. So much of it was a strange experience for me at first because I had no familiarity. But once I got to work that job, I thought, okay, this is just me as the pastor, but now I'm carrying a badge and gun, and I can still be who I am.
I love that. Was there ever a moment, and I think that's the point of our relationship with Christ. No matter what we do, we just show up as who we are, and that's our stewardship. That's like 100%. It doesn't matter what job you have, just show up as yourself. I love that. But ever moments where your faith was actually tested in the field?
No, the FBI is very rigorous in following the Constitution and the laws. And because of that, I felt like whenever we were going through our operation, we're doing what we're supposed to do, it didn't break from what I considered moral. So, I've been in fights. We've broken a guy's arm who wouldn't give it up. We've been there, we've tussled with people. And each time, we're not the initiators. We're not coming in and just acting like this. We are looking for opportunities for people to resolve this peacefully. And if not, now we're going to take that next step.
You're not the 1970s Chicago police. You're doing it
Very good. Good
differently.
reference. There you go.
Barely. Where do you see people misunderstanding good versus evil in today's world?
That it's black and white because you can call something evil that I go, yeah, I mean, I'd prefer not, but there's, working in the church, I'm talking with people about sins and trying to overcome them. So that's good. And then in the FBI, like I realize, oh, that's just surface stuff. This goes really deep. There's a lot here, but it's still humans making choices that, many times they're just on a path, or some of the teen prostitutes or adult women, they do stuff that, as I ask you, like, what would it take for you to pass through that threshold of saying, oh, I'm just going to be with strange men all day, every day? Like, that's horrible. That's traumatic. And so you had to have something traumatic to even get
Happened
you
to
there,
get there.
or desperate, or desperate. And so, even though you look at it and go, oh, those people are terrible, like, oh my gosh, they either had trauma or like they just need to live and they're so desperate. So, between that and the gangs and the pimps, like, start to understand the pimps. They're part of a culture that says, oh, a man acts like this and a real man controls women like this. And now it's glorified and they're just eating it up. And so they do awful things from it, but I see where it's coming from.
No, I see that. And those are people that I've never considered evil. You know, the drug addicts that are out there,
Good.
those aren't the, like, the devil's not proud of those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not like, yeah, I got him on drugs and he's out.
That's a great
You know what I'm
phrase. The
saying?
devil's not
Like,
proud.
you know who he's proud of is the person that looks like he has it all together and he's doing a bunch of shady stuff that no one can see. I think that's the evil. I think we can't even see it. I think what people, you know, and if you look on the streets, these are desperate, broken people.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, it's, they miss that opportunity to make a different choice or, you know, for whatever reason. But
Yeah, and you and I don't, you know, I don't mean to demean it, but you and I
yeah.
say that almost flippantly, but you have no idea what desperation and lack of choice can do to a person, you know. And so we'll watch Les Mis and like, oh, he's going to steal a loaf of bread, and like you glorify that, and like, no, that's the whitewashing of it. Like, you want to see desperate, come with me, and you're going to see this. This is the breaking of a human soul, and the difficulty of getting those people to trust us was very uphill.
No, I can imagine. And those are the people we're called to steward to, right? Not the people that have it all together. It is, you know, those are God's people. The devil didn't win with the drug addicts on the sidewalks. You know, those are people that, you know, need Christ more than ever. And I feel like that little, if we could bridge the gap there with the conversations, with seeing them as human, you know, doing
Yeah.
little things like praying for them when you see them, praying with them, I think that's their saving grace. And so many people just walk by, don't think twice, and you know, it is what it is. What is one thing happening right now that people should be paying more attention to?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll say this, as far as the FBI depends upon the public greatly. You know, we've got good people, we've got databases, we've got judicial process, but we depend upon people to report the things that they see that could be harmful. So it is, you know, as I've spoken with other people, like, oh, where do you see the threats? I'm like, I don't see the threats. Nobody sees the threats. You cannot see the threats until afterwards. Then people start breaking down, like, yeah, okay, I see that. Right. There are people out there who are near a breaking point, and only those close to that person have any idea. And so when there's a man up in Michigan who drives his pickup into a Mormon temple and starts shooting, then people go back and go, okay, yeah, I see this. But there has to be those steps. So if people have an awareness, then that is how we benefited of somebody coming forward and saying, look, I got to report this and I got to let you know. And we're limited too. I say we, not there anymore, but the FBI was limited into how we could approach it. But at least now we have something that we're aware of and it's on our radar.
If you see something, say something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
After everything you've seen, do you believe people are mostly good or just mostly broken?
I think people are mostly good. It was always funny to me because we would be on wiretaps all the time, and guys would say, like, hey, I have those two burritos to bring you. And people were like, he's got the coke coming in. I'm like, bro,
It's just a burrito.
these guys are people too. Like, they got to eat lunch. We'd be out on surveillance on a guy, and he's going into a grocery store. I'm like, he's buying groceries. Well, let's see if he's meeting with somebody. You know, I'd send somebody in. I'd go, hey, does he have any ice cream in his cart? Like, yeah, he does. All right, we're breaking because he's got to go
He's
straight
got to
home.
put it
Like,
in the freezer.
people do 95% of what they do is just like living their life, doing the normal things, and going about their business. And then there's the bad choices that they make along the way. So, yeah, people are good and need to probably do a better job of focusing on that and maybe, you know, minimizing the bad that they're choosing.
What's next for you? I mean, you retire from this high-paced life. What does this look like? What are you working on? How do you keep your sanity now that life is going to slow down a little bit?
Oh, I get sad with all. I had four SWAT buddies reach out to me yesterday. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I love chatting with them. I wrote the book. It's called Irreverent, From Saving Souls to Chasing Sinners in the FBI. So those stories that we would tell each other, I never lost the awe of what I got when I first got in the FBI. I'm like, are you serious? This is so cool. And along the way, there were times where I wanted to stop and look around and go, I'm doing this. This is amazing. Like, I'm on the FBI SWAT team. How cool is that? And now that I've been through, I look back and go, that was very cool. So I've taken those stories of cases I've been a part of or adventures we were on or things that I had seen and put it together and considered what would it be like if somebody from the Baptist church got thrown in the FBI and got to do some remarkable things. And I tell it from the perspective of somebody who's a pastor and things that I learned and used along the way.
I think that's amazing. Where do people need to go to be able to stay resourced and find it?
Okay, well, people need to be patient because the company that is publishing it is my wife's company, Weaving Influence. And unfortunate to me, paying customers have jumped the line ahead of me. So in the fall, the book will come out. But in the meantime, people can keep track on my Instagram, which is underscore Eric underscore Robinson, or they can look me up on LinkedIn and I'll make sure everybody knows what's coming through. And when it happens again, I'll reamplify our conversation. People go, oh yeah, that's right. That guy, let me read his book. That sounded kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think the book sounds interesting. I'm excited for you. And just the journey alone of putting a book out into the world is a whole process. So just know you're not alone in that. It feels very alone, but it's a weird experience. But this is the part of the show where I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not just your experience, Eric. It's how you have carried it, how you stood in places that most people will never go. And you've seen things that a lot of people couldn't handle. And instead of letting it harden you, you kept your humanity and you treated people with humanity. You kept your perspective, you kept your faith. I think that's incredibly rare for you to be able to share this and even help soften the heart of one of God's most stubborn. I think that's incredibly rare. I think it's powerful. I think the fact that you steward your mission and that you are who he called you to be in every area of your life, I think that is beautiful. And what an incredible testament to the relationship with Christ. I love that. And to
Thank you.
everyone listening, there is more going on in this world than you see on the surface. And this is not about living in fear. Okay, like let's move past that. God did not give you a spirit of fear. He gave you discernment. He gave you strength and clarity and awareness so you could be wise and just be grounded and be aware. And please remember that your mess is your message. Even the hard shit, even the things that you've had to face, even the parts of life that didn't and still don't make sense to you. That is where your strength is built. And if you've ever been feeling that pull to use your voice, to share your perspective, to actually say something that matters, please don't wait until it's perfect. I created a podcast support group for you guys. Absolutely free. I don't gatekeep. It's a space where you can start real, you can stay consistent and build something meaningful without overthinking it. Okay. So if it's been on your heart, come and join me. You guys get resourced. Make sure you're following Eric on Instagram. Let's root for him when his book comes out. He's gonna have to come back on the show because I'm sure there's a lot of stories that I would
Plenty
love to
more.
read about and talk about here. So, you guys, please share this episode out, okay? Someone needs to hear this. Someone has a hard heart like myself, and we need the perspective of someone who's been in the field working with the people to remember who we are to help make humanity a better place. Okay? Let's work on each other. Let's help each other grow and stretch through this. So please share this. You know people that Eric and I don't know, and without your help, which would be rather selfish if you just can't share the show. It's that simple. Just share it, okay? Make sure you leave a review. Stars are cute, but take some time to type it out. And you guys know, as always, if you're ready for the hot seat, come tell me why you're special. And again, Eric, thank you so much for coming on today. This was awesome.
Appreciate it, Brandon. Thank you.